Okay, let's call to order this meeting of the House Veterans and Emergency Services Committee for April 30, 2009, last day of April. Again, my apologies, several of us were caught in other meetings and trying to get here. And at least one member, I think, is on the Ways and Means road trip, so we may be just a little bit short. But I will go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 98 and SJM 2 because they both relate to transportation and they may be interconnected. And, oh, yes, I've got that over here. And as soon as the paperwork is organized here, we'll go forth.
All right, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 98 establishes a task force on veterans transportation to study methods for creating a statewide transportation system to assist veterans in accessing healthcare facilities. Sunsets on the first day of the 2011 legislative session, declares emergency effective on passage. We show no revenue impact and a fiscal statement has not been issued, but they're arguing for a minimal fiscal. And Senate Joint Memorial 2. Also, we've heard these two bills before, urges Congress to create and fund a statewide veterans transportation system that will transport veterans, particularly disabled veterans, to and from VA medical facilities. This one shows no revenue or fiscal impact, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's begin with Mr. Mann and Mr. O'Reilly, since we the spokespeople today. And yes, we have heard both of these bills before, and then we were told in no uncertain terms that we weren't going to be working Senate bills until we finished our work on the House bills, and please don't be sending them down for anything else. So I believe we now have the green light to go ahead and begin to work the Senate side.
Please, go ahead. You're much more important than I am.
This is not gauged on importance, level
right.
of importance. We welcome both of your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm the Public Information Manager with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I apologize that my director and deputy director are not here today. My director is at a Korean War event and for veterans, and he may come in. So we'll see. The deputy director is out, though. We've testified on both these bills a couple times, and as you know, we feel it's important to take a look at veteran transportation issues. It was an issue that the Task Force on Veteran Services could not grapple with given the time frames and the enormity of the issue. However, as we traveled around the state in the 24 towns we were in, everywhere we went, transportation was an issue. So this was an issue we thought if we could take a look for the task force, creating a new task force, to take a look at how we take existing transportation systems, whether they be private, public, done by the Legion or the DAV or however they are, and see if there's a way to integrate and include veterans in them. That might be something that would be a good idea for us, especially in rural and remote Oregon. And so we think that both asking Congress to do its responsibility in doing it from the federal level and working it from the state level would be a good idea. We are scheduled to meet with Congressman DeFazio's staff in the very near future to discuss progress at the federal level on these issues. And so we're excited about the bills and believe that it's the right step in the right direction for at least taking a look at if there are opportunities for us to handle veteran transportation issues in terms of making sure these veterans have access to the benefit they've earned in terms of their health care.
Good afternoon, Chair Cohen, members of the committee. My name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm here today representing the Oregon chapter of the Paralyzed Veterans of America National Veterans Service Organization. And as you can well imagine, being a paralyzed veterans organization, we, most of our members, have severe physical disabilities and would obviously have difficulty accessing transportation, which will take them to their health care, regardless if it's in Roseburg or even Boise, Idaho, some of them go to. Oregon, I know a little bit about Oregon's transportation system. It's rather extensive, but it's also piecemeal. There's private providers, there's public providers, and they're not everywhere, but it's pretty significant. This bill, the first bill, has the opportunity to enhance that system, and hopefully it could not only benefit our disabled veterans, but maybe disabled citizens throughout the state. I'm sure that people who live down in Lakeview would like to access health care that's probably provided in Roseburg. That's why we like this one. The other one, which addresses organ transportation issues on the federal level, disabled veterans throughout the country, rural veterans particularly, are having trouble accessing health care. Both of these bills would help lay groundwork for a nationwide transportation effort. I know that quite often, many of you know that the DAV does provide a van service. Unfortunately, that van service has never been accessible to persons in wheelchairs and our severely disabled veterans. And throughout the nation, members of our chapter, of our organization, have beaten their head against the VA agency wall trying to get that to change. And it hasn't done a very good job, again, because of the narrow agency view the VA has about the world. And hopefully this will help us get that to change even a little bit. And if you have any questions, oh, there is one thing. The last time you heard these bills, Representative Escobar asked a question about why a veteran can't receive health care close to home. And there's a laundry list of reasons why they don't allow that. And if you'd ever like to go over that, I'll go to the laundry list with you. I won't bore you with it today. If there's any questions, I'll be trying to do my best to answer them. And if I can't answer them, I'll find you an answer.
One quick question, Kevin, specifically. I don't think I had noted before. You mentioned that the van system doesn't work well for individuals in your organization, the paralyzed vets. Are you meaning that the vans don't accommodate chairs well?
Do not accommodate wheelchairs.
Okay.
They
I want to make sure I was understanding that correctly.
Yeah. We've tried to change that over time, and we've always, again, bounced up against the agency wall and haven't been able to accomplish it. Part of that's our problem for not organizing properly. It's not our fault, really.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. If anybody else want to jump in first and maybe get mine answered?
I don't have a question.
Okay, let's come back to comments after we get some questions covered.
This thing really bothers me.
One, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mann, when you see these are the director of these divisions or their designees, are you pretty confident you already have some people that are lined up that will serve in these positions and do us right by that, and so that, you know, we don't have like this fluctuating committee? It's going to take a majority to get things done, and just want to make sure we have the commitment from people to do this.
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I can tell you from our experience from the Veterans Task Force, we have all the people lined up, really, that want to participate in this. We have commitments. We've talked to ODOT already about their participation because they're a major player. We've actually talked to the local communities about their bus services and other things. Everyone was very excited about taking on this issue, and again, we just didn't have the time or effort to be able to put it on and continue the task force. So we feel very confident that this next task force, that the players are in place and everyone's ready to go to work.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I guess to follow up on that, one of my questions was essentially, before one of these things happens, somebody has to be the one that pulls everybody together. Who's going to convene it, summon the membership and make sure this all happens?
Madam Chair, I believe that would be ODVA, given our experience with the last task force. We're prepared to take on that leadership role and convene a task force as the bill describes. And I believe it would be much like the task force we had, where we have the legislated members, but then we will open it up to anybody who wants to participate. So it'll be a lot larger group than what you're seeing in the bill, because we want complete openness, and anybody who wants to come participate will be welcome to sit at the table and be engaged.
And certainly I hope that you will coordinate with this committee in terms of our interim activities.
Absolutely.
We'll be happy to be available to you for reports, et cetera. I think the secondary question that I had comes from looking more carefully this time at the bill, saying that the report will be made no later than October 1, 2011. Is there some reason that there won't be something out before the 2011 session?
Madam Chair, I think that was an arbitrary date that when we were working with council, we had to throw a date in, and they just picked a date. We're happy to report to the interim committee on our work. We're happy to report at any stage, because as you know, in these task force, you tend to make progress in chunks. So there'll be times where we'll be able to come to you, and I would really appreciate coming to the interim committee every time the interim committee meets and talking about the progress of the task force.
I don't have any burning need to change the date in the legislation, but the reason I raise the question in that manner is if there develops a potential for some sort of legislative action, you know the timelines and the dates as well as any of the rest of us, and I would hope that it comes through this committee in a timely enough manner to come before the next legislative session, and then there may be a final report in October of 2011. Yes, but I want to get that on the radar screen.
Madam Chair, I can share with you, on the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services, we ended in December, and we were ready for the legislature, putting in all our bills, and we found that as the legislature has been meeting, we sure wish that task force were still together, because there is still work to be done, and we're dissolved. So we've been calling members in the goodness of their heart, but we're not an official task force anymore. So I kind of like the October date to keep working, because we've learned through this Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services, it would have been nice had we had this task force during the legislative process to be a cohesive body instead of how it is now. So I think October's good, and I completely agree with you. You will have a legislative packet.
Well, just in follow-up to that, I think that it was very helpful in this session to have had the work done and the legislative package available, and it certainly helped me guide the work of this committee, and I think it's helpful to the rest of the body to know that it's not just one person's idea, but it's a collective effort that folks are behind.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Representative Matthews and then Representative Escobar.
You make a great point, and I'll say this is my favorite committee by far because of the work that was done on the front end of this and the cohesiveness and the folks coming together for one common goal, which is our, you know, veterans and improving their conditions and what we're going to do for them. So I thank you and everybody else in this room and outside this room that orchestrated the effort. I do. It clearly makes this my favorite committee and the most productive committee I serve on. Thank you.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would hope that when we meet with the congressman, that we would ask that even maybe we in this state could be an experiment. This experiment would be you take the effort, the logistics, and the transportation issues that we have in this state and the few hospitals that we have in this state, that we would take out and look at the economic factor of getting all this together instead of looking at a fee base. And the reason I say that is because it seems inevitable that government, especially the federal and to the state to a certain extent, and of course the more local government, the less there is, we have a tendency to pick up a dime and drop a dollar. We don't know how to push a boulder properly. We push it sideways instead of down a hill. And I would hope that there's no reason why each veteran that leaves the service doesn't have a card that would have a number similar to a Social Security card that they know that you're entitled to those benefits. Why would you have to go through a system like we have that's so cumbersome that takes a veteran 60 days plus in order to get in to see a doctor? I mean, that is not only ludicrous, but it's beneath contempt when it comes to the health of the benefit to that veteran. And I would think that we would consider these issues instead of just figuring out a way to get people in to see the veteran administration in the specific geographical areas. Why don't we try something novel and think about what the veteran's health is?
Representative Escobar, I want you to hold that thought for some additional information that we're going to get on where we are on our current federal within the federal process in just a few minutes. It's not on the agenda, but I think that would roll in nicely. Could you do that for me, please?
I'm holding it right now.
There we go. Thank you.
It's been here quite a while.
I had a feeling it wouldn't go away. Any other questions for these individuals? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on either of these transportation-related issues today? Welcome, Mr. Willis. I see you've made it back. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 98 and the public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 2, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 98. And then, to remind ourselves, this has no amendments pending. I probably didn't want to open that work session because we don't. Do we need to get the appropriate fiscals at this point in time?
We do, yes, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
We will close the work session on Senate Bill 98, and we'll have these back whenever we have all of the appropriate, whatever it is.
That was a quick window.
Yeah, it was a quick window.
It's getting up a little quicker than that. I didn't get my hand up.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Senate passed it.
We were wondering how it got passed without one.
Well, we can bring these back very quickly for action if need be, but I think we better take the moment to make sure that where we are.
Just curious how it got out of the Senate without fiscal.
Well, it may well have it, but we don't seem to have it.
Thank you.
That's not it?
No, that's just the minimum.
Okay. So that we can check the appropriate paperwork, we'll hold off on action on this. I think that the floor of the House is going to be very busy for the next little bit managing the movement of our House bills, so they're not going to be particularly welcoming of any Senate bills working right away anyway, so there really isn't a rush and there's no sense in. I'm going to try to avoid making some of the mistakes that I made in earlier processing. With that, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 94A. Mr. Molina.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 94, Ingross, allows the Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, ODVA, to request fingerprints of all agency and non-agency personnel who come into contact of ODVA personal records, financial and tax transactions, business mail relating to agency clients and the organization. We show no amendment nor a revenue impact, and we do have here a minimal fiscal impact, but no statement at this point.
Okay. Thank you. I will let the department determine who would like to speak to this initially. Welcome, Director.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Before you start on this, I think my first question is, will I see you in Newport for the Loyalty Day celebration this weekend?
You will now.
We will be recognizing our veterans in Newport on Friday evening and Saturday, if anyone wishes to join us. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'd like to thank Tom Mann for filling in while I finish swearing in the officers of the new of the Oregon Korean War Veterans Association in Albany. So here I am. So in the testimony, we're going to change the name. And I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 94, which amends ORS 406050 and gives the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs the authority to request fingerprints of certain employees and contractors or vendors for the purpose of conducting background investigations under ORS 181534. The department has determined that due to the confidential nature of the documents it maintains, such as Social Security numbers, private medical records, medical health records, DD Form 214 medical discharge documents, financial disclosure information, and tax information, that certain employees, as well as some doing business with the department, should have criminal background checks for security purposes. Currently, the department has authority to conduct criminal background checks on employees accessing the Oregon Veterans Home as a security measure to protect residents. However, the department does not have overarching authority to conduct these background checks on new employees or employees who transfer positions within the agency. Senate Bill 94 is a housekeeping bill that will allow the department to request fingerprints and conduct criminal background checks as needed by the department. And, Madam Chair, I'd like to stray from my written testimony for just a moment and tell you how important I think this is to our agency. We enjoy, as many state agencies do, a public trust and an expectation that our people will take this highly personal information and treat it in a manner in which it should be cared for, and further, that they will never enrich themselves or a family member or a friend based on the information that they are able to come into contact with by virtue of their employment. I want this to be squeaky clean in terms of how our department operates. And if someone were not to want to furnish their fingerprints and undergo a criminal background check, that would be a red flag as far as I'm concerned. And I say that as someone who is retired from the state police and used to have as one of my responsibility the Bureau of Identification and Information. So I know it's an important function, and I thank this committee for its consideration of what I think is a very important housekeeping bill for our agency. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I see on the Senate side there was an amendment clarifying that the bill pertains only to future employees and those who are transferred into positions with access of sensitive information.
That's correct.
You are, I guess maybe I'm just a little unclear as to, you have already received that clearance for existing?
For the individuals that came under the existing statute, we've already processed all those criminal histories. What we want now is to be able to expand it, and I can give you a quick example, Madam Chair, that I think would demonstrate this. For a long time, those people who are caring for folks at assisted living facilities, skilled nursing, Alzheimer's, and other dementia, have had to undergo a criminal history check. What it has not had to happen, and would under this bill, would be those people who desire to become accredited veteran service officers would themselves have to then undergo a criminal history check to make sure that they have nothing in their background that would question their ability to enjoy the public trust by accessing that kind of documents that I listed in here, which all of which are very personal and should be maintained very privately in nature.
So that is not currently the
case? That is not currently the case, no, Madam Chair.
Interesting. Questions? Okay, I see that it moved through the Senate committee very easily. Do you have any information on how this did in the Senate itself? Was there any opposition on the floor?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't recall any opposition.
Well, I believe Representative Esquivel has that information at hand. It was unanimous. Okay. That's always helpful to us to know that. Late-breaking additional information?
Well, the amendment, it's immaterial at this point, but the amendment was drawn up by the ACLU.
Okay.
We were not with them on that amendment.
I see. Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill? This is a different committee to meet you.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I actually wasn't intending to testify, but I want to clarify the record. I think the committee, Senate Judiciary Committee, that had the bill had some concerns about that language that you discussed. The amendment the ACLU wanted was the...
Andrea, could I slow you down
I'm so sorry.
A little bit? We're not in a hurry. Thank you.
The amendment the ACLU wanted was the emergency clause provision being removed, as we think it's important that there be rules established, as there is agencies are required to then put forward rules to ensure a fitness test is done. I've become increasingly concerned about various agencies across the state and the kind of rules and their clear understanding. And while the Veterans Affairs currently has some authority to do this for a limited scope of individuals, they are now significantly expanding both the types of job positions and therefore the appropriate fitness test for those types of job positions. And so we asked, and the committee agreed, to remove the emergency clause so there can be notice of rulemaking and the opportunity to comment in a timely manner.
Great.
So I just wanted to clarify what the ACLU issue was in this.
That's helpful, just so that we know what
right.
we're looking
I think we had concerns about the other language, not having it in front of me, but I know the committee did and instigated that on their own.
I would agree that it's sort of past history, but I like to understand it. Any other questions on this bill? Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing on SB 94A, and I think that we can be assured that all three of these are ready to come back for work session when that is timely. Committee, since we have a little bit of time, I understand that we've had some progress made with some, or at least there are some updates that the committee might be interested in with regard to our federal partners. So I don't see General Caldwell. It looks like
he was here.
Any of you who would like to share here?
Good afternoon, Chair Cowan, members of the committee. I'm not General Caldwell, but I try to, play one on TV from time to time. For the record, my name is Paul.
We could comment on the differences, but I think it would be helpful if we didn't.
Okay. For the record, my name is Paul Evans. I'm the policy advisor for veterans and military policy for Governor Kungoski. And I did want to present some updated information that I think...
General would like to join you. He's welcome to.
Having to do with federal legislation and also the events of May 8th having to do with bill signing for bills that you
Please.
Helped make happen. So to begin with, when we presented the task force recommendations to you, one of the things that we pledged to do our best on was to ensure that your time would not be wasted. That if you spent time and effort on the language of memorials, that they would actually be used for something, not just a piece of paper that got sent to Congress. Some of that work has actually happened faster than we thought, quite frankly. I'm here today to hold up House Resolution 1211 that has to do with women veterans' health, of which Congressman Wu is a co-sponsor and working to move forward. It is one of several that are either already dropped or in the process of being dropped in the next couple of weeks. Congressman Blumenauer, who took up the charge of the home loan program, trying to get the lifetime benefit, some of the changes at the federal level, that should be dropping in the next week or so, with Wisconsin and members from California signing on, which is helpful since the speaker, of course, is from California. Senator Wyden, his 90-day soft landing gained a lot of media attention, and we are expecting draft forms to be put out actually for comment to the public in the next several weeks so we can improve that, strengthen it, and he is committed to making that go forward, as is he also is committed to working on the on the differential rates for remote and rural areas. As you recall, House Joint Memorial 12, which was actually not part of the task force package because we were limited on space, but Representative Barton put forward as in line with the recommendations. The idea there is that for states that are especially west of Mississippi, but states that have large areas of remote and rural areas, to look at a differential in reimbursement rates for transportation. So if people are driving their own vehicles, there's a recognition that the wear and tear on driving 150 miles one way is slightly different than driving 12. So that piece of legislation is also in the works. Senator Merkley has taken up the charge of full funding of Category 1 through 8. That may not be its own standalone piece of legislation because there's so many proposals currently having to do with veterans' health, but he has committed to working to help the president implement the president's campaign promise of full funding of Categories 1 through 8, and we're looking at different tools to be able to do that at this time. But he is committed and, in fact, already doing a lot of the research necessary for that work. We're meeting with Congressman DeFazio tomorrow, provided the pig flu does not get much worse and all of our attention is turned that way. But at this point, we're planning on meeting with Congressman DeFazio to talk about transportation systems. The measure that you just considered a little while ago and the memorial associated with it will be centerline with looking at really the best way to move people back and forth under current circumstances. We met with Congressman Schrader's office. We're still trying to figure out where we are on the DFOP lever. Acronyms are not our friends, so that's Disabled Veterans Outreach Program, Local Veterans Employment Rep. We are trying to get more funding for that program. We had a good constructive conversation. I think at this point the Congressman is trying to figure out how best to approach that problem, and we look to continue discussions. Congressman Walden, we are also going to be meeting with in the next couple weeks. He, of course, is signed on to help with the full funding of Categories 1 through 8 on his side of the House, as well as transportation issues and the fee basis problem that is so prevalent in the remote and rural areas. Representative Esquivel mentioned the permanent funding piece a little bit earlier. Senator Merkley, his staff, we actually talked in depth about the importance of having no discretionary flexibility in terms of whether or not health costs are funded, and that it's time for that permanency. And I believe that while he is not yet committed to a specific piece of legislation, he's very interested in trying to find a way to make that permanent, and that's on the top of his radar screen. Those are the current pieces of federal legislation that are attached to the memorials that you all acted on and the recommendations. If I could just real briefly, I want to mention the bills that we believe will be part of the May 8th ceremony. As you know, there's a little bit of a timing process in terms of even after they pass the Senate, it has to go through a couple of hands before it can get to the governor's desk. At current, we're looking at comments in celebration of Senate Bill 96, which was the definition of veterans from 7 to 1, which is very helpful. House Bill 2762, we hope to be signed that day, which creates Oregon Military Family Appreciation Day, of which we are scrambling at this point, and more communities every day are coming forward with wanting to be a part of that process. And I think we're up to about 14 or 15 now, and Roseburg is, in fact, now part of that process, thanks to the help of Representative Freeman. Executive Order 0903, which, as you know, required outreach efforts from the departments and the agencies of government. The governor will be, we believe, re-signing an update to Executive Order 0903. I don't know what the new number is going to be, but a new executive order that incorporates that piece as well as some extra timelines to help us succeed. We also believe House Bill 2303, which I do not believe went through this committee, but some of you were involved in those dialogues, having to do with the Servicemen Civil Relief Act and some of the challenges that military families have been experiencing when businesses are not doing what they're supposed to do by law. It provides some new remedies for that problem. Those are the things that right now are on tap for action. The governor will also, of course, mention House Joint Memorials 2, 4, and Senate Joint Memorial 1 and 3 that talk about the aspirational approaches that we're trying to do through the Congress. It should be a nice package for veterans. We believe it's one of the more comprehensive approaches for veterans policy in the last 50 years. The morning before the bill signing, that's 11 o'clock to 11:30 is the bill signing. The morning before, of course, we've invited everybody that's taken part in the reintegration summits, as well as military families from across the state, to come to Salem to be available to talk with individual legislators. I know that you all become experts on certain specific policy areas, and we are trying to bring out everybody that has any experience in the field with veterans on education, employment, healthcare, housing, retirement, and those types of issues. So I believe, hopefully, even if you can spare a couple minutes, coming to room 50 between 9 and 11 will provide some, at least a connection that can be followed up later for information.
Let me clarify those a little bit. That's the morning before, do you mean as in May 7th?
May 8th, I'm sorry. May 8th.
Okay, during the morning before the bill signing,
yes,
on May 8th.
Yes, May 8th from 9 to 11 there is... Okay. There's a number of folks coming to town to basically celebrate the fact there's going to be the 11 to 11:30 bill signing, as well as providing legislators and staff and actually agency personnel the opportunity to talk about some of the emerging issues.
So the group will be gathering. This is on, I believe that's a Friday.
Yes, ma'am.
on May 8th, the group will be gathering from 9 to 11 in room 50, mm-hmm. and then at 11 o'clock, the governor's bill signing is planned in...
Governor's ceremonial office on the second floor outside the Senate at current...
In this building.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
In this building. The only potential change on that is if the crowds are too big, mm-hmm. you might do it outside that room, but there'll be people directing where you're at.
Okay. Committee, understand that floor session will be taking place that day at 10:15. So it is a challenge for this committee to be available. We'll probably work on getting one or two of us excused, but because it had to be built around the governor's schedule, it has not worked well with the legislative schedule, to say the least. So we're doing the best we can. This committee, however, will be addressing some issues around deployment and support and various things of that nature in our hearing on our regular scheduled hearing on May 7th, the day before. We'll be doing kind of an informational update and some information about ways to support our troops and that sort of thing. That's kind of what we're working on for that day's agenda.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, if there, we hope to have the bill list finalized by, if not tomorrow, then certainly by Monday morning. We'll send that out, and if there's specific bills that you really want to be a part of, for the whole 30 minutes, we can try to coordinate that so that at least you're there for the one that you have the most investment. And I do, again, apologize with the timing. I wish I had more control over the schedule. I really do not.
I understand that. I just want to leave caution to the committee. Floor session is not something that you can simply wander away when you wish and be considered excused. And there is a several-day process to request that getting excused. So I would not recommend you just dash over for part of the signing unless you want an unexcused absence if there's a vote taken during that time. The sooner you can get that out so that people can make those requests if they choose to do so, the better. That would be very helpful. Please, General, did you have anything you wanted to add to this part of it? And then I would like to ask you to not to leave for a moment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no, I think Paul's done a good job of detailing that. I will say I think one of the more important ones is going to these bills are going to affect our current deployment is 2303. That's a very good piece of legislation that I think both judiciary committees have worked hard to push through quickly to get it ready for this deployment, which begins this weekend. So that I think will mean a big difference to a lot of family members and soldiers. So we're delighted that the whole package is going through. That one stands out in our mind as one of the premier ones that are going to make a real significant immediate impact.
I appreciate you bringing that to our attention since it wasn't one that was
right.
Worked through this committee. Thank you. Thank you for that. Second subject that I would like to just move to quickly is the flu situation. And I want to advise committee members that this is sort of one of those things that right now it's primarily a health issue. We are not in Oregon at the point where it moves into some of the other areas of interest for this committee, as in emergency services. Would you stop coughing, please? But
a little piggy thing too.
All right. I just want to make sure. Otherwise, we're going to have to quarantine you. So tomorrow, Friday, yes, at 8:30 in the House Human Services Committee, we will be receiving an update from Dr. Melcon and folks around the health issues on this subject. One moment, please. And I I'll say something in that committee. I've also advised the chair and others that at the point in time when, from the perspective of emergency services, we should be doing an informational hearing about our preparedness, readiness, whatever. We can certainly move that into, this committee is open to that sort of an informational process as well, but it's going to begin with the more direct public health recommendations of why you're supposed to cover your mouth and wash your hands, which will be happening tomorrow at 8:30 in the Human Services Committee. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You probably tomorrow morning will get to a lot of this, but I'm kind of disappointed with the lack of attack on this that our federal government's taken. And their point is, well, why should we seal the border because it's already here when we need to stop more from coming into the state? So, because today a bunch of states ended up with it, and I think we need to look at our airports and securing a lot of places to see where the virus might be coming from. So,
well, Representative, if you have time, I would encourage you to try to participate or listen in tomorrow. I think there is a very real reality that people need also, as I've said before, in both in emergency preparedness and public health, that there's personal responsibility involved in protecting yourself. Good hand washing techniques, staying away from others if you are sick, and that's the reality, and that's what we need to deal with. So
I would just let you know, Madam Chairman, that Department of Human Services, Health Division, Emergency Management, Military Department, Governor's Office, we've had several meetings in the last several days, and I would tell you that we're in a support role at this point to assist them, and we are doing that. The facts that you're mentioning, I'm sure that Dr. Cohn will bring up tomorrow in a very big manner. I would tell you that we've had a couple of little minor activities in support, as I said, in the support roles, and we're receiving some of those stockpiled, the 25% that the federal government has put out to the states. I think we're getting some in today. We're getting some more tomorrow. We're storing those for the health division for future distribution as they see fit at an undisclosed location. So, but I would say that we're leaning forward. The health division, to its credit, and I think with all of the partners, it's been a very good partnership, has been practicing and planning and exercising this very thing for about the last 5 or 6 years. Oregon has a very mature set of profiles and planning and execution matrices that are proving out to be very well put together, very thoughtful. As we've opened the book and started looking through it, what do we do now? You know, who's doing what? And it's working quite well at this point. Now, that's at the beginning of this. I think I heard last night on, I think it was Jim Lehrer's NewsHour, that I think it was the CDC representative said this is a marathon, not a sprint, and this is going to take some time. So I think it's going to be a while, and everything we've heard from the health division indicates that. And so I think we have to kind of prepare ourselves as a citizenry that we got to keep these things going, not just the first 2 or 3 weeks, but it's going to be a fairly long haul that we're going to be dealing with this, and we need to be prepared to do that. So we're doing exactly that.
Thank you. That, I believe, is the reason that it's important to begin this conversation with the health authorities, and particularly around when you say stockpiles, you're referring to the Tamiflu. And there are significant limitations as to what that particular medication can do, and so I think I'm sure that Dr. Cohn will cover that with far more expertise than any of us have.
I got my doctor degree from the Juarez School of Medicine and Upholstery, so you'll have to measure
understand.
Everything I say.
So we will look forward to hearing from Dr. Cohn on this particular subject.
I would do that if I were you.
Yes, thank you.
Chair, council members of the committee, just a couple of other items on this since we brought it up. The first is, as your committee administrator David knows, we were trying to get a briefing for you before Friday, but quite frankly, technology got in our way, and we were not able to put that together, and we decided instead of putting together something that wouldn't help, that we would take our time and do it right. We are working on trying to make sure that the discussions with this committee especially are focused not on just what is going on in real time, which is right now the public health's domain, and I think the briefing tomorrow is going to be very good. But also some of the policy issues that are popping up that we were not expecting. For example, this morning I was notified by one person, and when I started trying to dig into it, I found out that it is actually true that there, among in certain cases, preschools, for example, you can't have sanitizer, hand sanitizer in the classroom because of previously determined safety challenges. Maybe that needs to be revisited under certain circumstances. So there are things popping up that we are learning as we go through that we're trying to capture and in an informed, not a rushed, but an informed way, make sure that we have that opportunity to talk about in terms of, all right, are there times where this really doesn't make the best public policy? Are there things that we need to look at as well? So we're looking forward to that discussion and making sure that the lessons we learn as we go through this process are presented to you in a way that for policy discussions are hopefully helpful for the long term. And as the general said, this is going to be a long marathon, and we're going to make sure that we provide you with as much information as we can so we can go through this hand in hand.
That's an interesting point, and I'd be interested in knowing a little bit about the source of the policy and public health's response, as well as whatever we might need to do. For information, that Human Services hearing has been moved from the regular room in which that committee meets to hearing room F, as in Frank, and I understand that there will be overflow seating available, has been arranged as well. So if there are no specific questions on this issue, we will defer to tomorrow's conversation and then see what we need to do in follow-up in this committee. A couple more announcements. One is that the Oregon Student Veterans Conference is being held on Saturday, May 2nd. That is the day after tomorrow. This Saturday at the University of Oregon. If anyone has an interest, it appears that our administrator probably would have some more information on it. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a quick announcement that as I reflect back on the work we've done so far, I'm just particularly proud that we've done this as a team. And I think that says something. When you look at the majority of things that have moved out of this committee, they've gone unanimous on the floor, which I think there's something to be said about the teamwork that's here, but also the fine work of David and, of course, Debbie. We are a team, and the folks that have helped us. I just want to remind us all, and we know this, but anybody else out there, that this weekend March is the date that I kind of think we all put as a threshold, that we're going to be having deployment ceremonies throughout the state Saturday and again on Monday. And wishing well and good luck, and can't wait to see you again, to 3,000 of our troops. And these are citizen soldiers that are leaving employment. They may be your UPS truck driver. They may be the teacher's or your student's educator. But bottom line is fathers, mothers, sisters, brothers, sons, and daughters serving our country. So as I think about that, I think about how this deployment impacts all veterans for what they've been through already and those that are serving again as veterans. And so I just wish them well. And we'll make our way around. I'm particularly proud, too, of the work that we continue to drive on, and I think that's important. But at 6:30 on Saturday, I'm really proud of the city of Gresham, more importantly, the citizens of Gresham, Gail Hanna in particular, the chair of the committee of the Heroes Memorial Task Force. 5 years ago, this committee got together and thought that it would be only right to have a memorial in the city of Gresham. And they chose a spot of land above Gresham Main Park on Powell and Roberts, and they have pillars representing all of the service, all the services, including police and firefighters. And they did this through a great deal of fundraising, and each pillar stands. It's just incredible. 6:30 on Saturday night, which I think is fitting given the solemn days and the events earlier, they will turn the lights on for the first time on this memorial. So with that said, it's going to be quite a day. And I'm just really proud that that's what my community's done for their veterans. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. All right. Just for that, I'm going to have to elaborate a little bit on the City of Newport's Loyalty Days celebration, which is this weekend. It is something that began a number of years ago. I don't have all of the dates off the top of my head, but the city has carried on, and every year on the first Saturday or the first weekend in May, recognizes the commitment and dedication of all members of the service. Friday evening at the Veterans Memorial Park, there's a reading of the names of the individuals who were Oregon individuals who were lost in Vietnam. And Director Willis and I have participated in that reading for a number of years. And on Saturday at noon, there's a parade. There's a number of other ceremonies going on. So if anybody wants a day at the beach, we are recognizing our service members this weekend as well. With Representative Boone, I was moments away.
I know. I thought I'd just wait till the last second. Well, I just found out, too, yesterday or the day before, that in my district, we're going to finally be erecting some memorial of some sort to the 10th Mountain Division, of which my uncle, by marriage, is a member. And he still, in his 80s, goes skiing on ski vacations. And I've never been skiing with him because, frankly, I've been a little bit afraid. I don't turn, but I hear he turns and still goes faster than I do. Okay. So that's going to be somewhere on Highway 26, outside of Banks.
Thank you. Unless anyone other any other events we need to cover, we will. Oh, Director Willis, excuse me.
Madam Chair, I
have his book out now.
Right here, Jim Willis, Department of Veterans Affairs. Of course, tomorrow we begin Memorial Day month in May, and Memorial Day will be celebrated on the 25th. But traditionally, Memorial Day has been on the 30th over the years. So on the 25th, you'll probably be in your districts or wherever at various ceremonies. But I just want to, since we're putting dates down here ahead of time, to tell you that on Saturday the 30th, we will celebrate the traditional Memorial Day at 1 p.m. at the Afghan-Iraqi Memorial. Sadly, we will add four new names to that memorial from Oregonians who have been killed in action in Afghanistan or Iraq, bringing, I believe, to 117 people whose names are associated with that war in both those theaters of war. There were, just in case you wanted to know how we handle this, we always hold a private ceremony prior to the public ceremony, day ahead of time, for the family members only, so they can come in and see their loved one's name and spend some quiet time. And then if they're ready, they can come to the public ceremony the next day. Some are ready and some are not. And then we hold the public ceremony the next day at 1 o'clock. So that's the 30th of Saturday. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. That's May 30th at 1 o'clock. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Seeing Representative Widener.
Since we're doing announcements, May 8th, we actually support veterans a little bit out in Yamhill County, too. We got a museum, an air museum, and we will be doing Veterans Appreciation or Family Appreciation Day for veterans' families on the 8th at the air museum, starting early in the morning. And we've got it set up so all veteran families can go in for free to the air museum that day. We're still working on getting more out there. Bob Miller will be out there in the morning with me from KPAM because he does a lot for veterans' families and raising toys and things like that for them at Christmas time. So we're getting a lot of stuff cruising at the Air Museum in McMinnville. So.
Thank you. Okay. Any announcements on this end of the dais? With that, we will close this meeting of the committee. Thank you.